or something interactive. Especially as my work gets more expensive, I like to have work that's free for my friends. Because, I mean, going back to the banana, it's like one of the fun things about the art world, fun and like kind of disturbing, is that the value of art is so just random. And it's just based on like chance and investment and whim and reputation. And so it's fun to show work that's expensive and free right next to each other, and to think that anybody could have access to it. So the piece that you're talking about was part of a book, and it's an illustrated book, but the illustrations were made separately from the text. And so if you got a book, they were $15, and you got just the text, and you got a list of clues. And if you follow the clues, you go around the whole Portland metro area to places where rivers come together, to different confluences, and you could dig up the illustrations for the book out of the ground and add them to your book to complete the text. So it was like kind of a treasure hunt, and I've done a few projects like that. Like one time I had just blank panels in the gallery, and people could go out to these different wild areas and dig up the real paintings out of the ground and bring them back to the gallery. And if they found one, they got to keep it for free after the show was over. So that's one of those projects. And so the seal of the strength in solitude, or whatever I called it, that was all of the illustrations in that book, all those pieces were sort of along this theme of like, ecological passport, like doing all these different things to sort of like live right in the climate change future. And for each one, you get a seal in your passport, so they're all named seals.
That is really elaborate.
Yeah, it is.
Wow. Before we go, I just wanted to say that we're Roca, the Reynolds Art Gallery of Contemporary Art, and we do cool things here like this podcast, and we hold art gallery shows. Just check us out on art-roca.com and on our Instagram page, which is the Reynolds Art Show.
Oh, and thank you, Ryan, for coming.
Thanks for having me. Such a treat.
We are trying to find small education reform within our own community as immediate as possible, and we are making those steps, listening. There's people out here who are willing to go to these forums and listen to what people have to say, advocate. We are providing an online platform and physical platform for people to discuss and work at ways of dismantling racism and allyship. We are forming bonds with people and can make a connection so that we can eradicate racism and allyship, creating these bonds with people that can make a huge difference.
Welcome to Sprouts from Pacifica, radio from the grassroots. Sprouts is a weekly program that showcases radio productions by independent community media. We bring local stories to a global audience, produced at a different location every week. Today on Sprouts, youth resisting racism. Two independent media programs, Outcasting and The Children's Hour, joined forces to share their response to the apparently unjustified police killings of George Floyd and other people of color, the culture of racism that we live in, and ideas on how we can truly work toward a society that champions liberty and justice for all. Hi, I'm Justin from Outcasting Media, creator of Public Radio's LGBTQ youth programs. I'll begin today's program with some thoughts, a poem, and an interview with Jalay Knowles, founder of What About Us, a local activist organization in New York. As a Black gay teenager in America today, I recognize that in the eyes of many, I am not fully equal. Despite many gains, LGBTQ people are still subject to discrimination in many ways. And of course, discrimination against Black people exists in many terrible and violent ways as well. Equality is supposed to be one of the guiding principles of the United States. Yet, I'm not equal. And I recognize that whatever equality I do have was fought for. It didn't just exist as it does for white, straight people. The rights we have today were gained through protest, rallies, and riots. But we continue not to have the full rights that white, straight people have. This is why both of my communities, LGBTQ and Black, must keep fighting for greater equality. I've had to understand since I was a child that simple things like going for a run, holding someone's hand, or getting pulled over by the cops could get me killed. I've always had to watch what I do around people because of the simple facts of whom I love and what my skin color is. During Black History Month this year, I presented a poem about the oppression and killing of innocent Black people. As a result of the protests and riots in the name of the Black Lives Matter movement, I realized at this time in particular, my voice needs to be heard. Here's the poem. Walking through the city streets, past sundown, keeping my hands out of my pockets, hood down, pick in hand, police sirens wailing, screaming out of the megaphone, get on the ground. My knees hitting the concrete, drop your weapon, they say. Children screaming, lights gleaming, women crying, shots firing, heartbeat dropping, laughter stopping. It was a misunderstanding, they say, but we all know their ways. Headlines: Black teen resist police. George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Eric Garner are just a few of the thousands of Black people who have been killed unjustly by police officers. George Floyd allegedly used a counterfeit bill and was killed after a Minneapolis police officer detained him by kneeling on his neck for over 8.5 minutes on May 25th, 2020. Breonna Taylor was shot and killed in her sleep by police officers in her Kentucky apartment during a police raid on the wrong apartment. It has never been and will never be true that Black lives matter more than others. It's simply that, as a community, we've seen how little Black lives matter to some people in power. I am tired of not getting listened to. We are all tired of not getting listened to. Our voices are important and need to be heard. The community I live in has been relatively peaceful, but that doesn't mean that there isn't racism. Earlier this year, 4 letters of the N-word and a swastika were carved into a bathroom stall. The next day, the Student Equity Club, of which I'm a member, gathered to talk about the incident. The principal was very honest with us. He explained to us how shocked he was and said that whoever committed this act of hate would be dealt with accordingly. Throughout the day, the principal held an assembly for each grade, keeping in mind the priorities of our equity group, which are to achieve and maintain equity through education and ensure a similar response to any future acts of hate in our school. With this act of hate in students' and educators' minds, we were all more open to having these uncomfortable conversations about racism, sexism, homophobia, and so many other real-life topics. And with the Black Lives Matter movement becoming more prominent than ever before, it was important to know that I could have these uncomfortable yet important conversations in a school setting. I sent an email about the Black Lives Matter movement with my poem to the student body and most of the faculty at my school. The email prompted conversations with several people, some of whom I didn't even know. One teacher said she's been struggling with these issues and spends time every day talking about them with her children. Another, who has a Black transgender son, said she lives in fear and wants the world to find meaningful answers and justice for everyone. Among the responses, a common thread was fear for the safety of Black family members. It was amazing to receive so many supportive responses to my email, and the conversation needs to continue. With that in mind, a woman named Jelaine Knowles started a local activist organization in Austin, New York, called What About Us. I spoke with her about the organization and what she hopes it can accomplish. Jelaine, thanks for joining us. Tell us how you started.
My activism started with watching the video of George Floyd being murdered, and kind of, I think everyone can agree that enough was enough and it should have been enough. But I think in the moment now, I work at Roosevelt Elementary School in Ossining, and I thought of the kids that I work with. So at that moment, I realized that I needed to do something for them and just be a part of the movement. And that's what I wanted to do.
With your organization, What About Us? What are your main goals? What do you want to reach? What are your short-term and long-term goals?
Our 4 main key components are to educate, to listen, to advocate, and create allyship. all four can start off with short-term goals. For example, education. We are trying to find small education reform within our own community as immediate as possible, and we are making those steps, listening. There's people out here who are willing to go to these forums and listen to what people have to say, advocate. We are providing an online platform and physical platform for people to discuss and work at ways of dismantling racism and allyship. We are forming bonds with people and making connections. And those are all short-term. Long-term is complete education reform at a higher level to really listen in and hone in on everybody's perspectives, to really be an advocate so that we can eradicate racism and allyship, creating these bonds with people that can make a huge difference.
How do you see your purpose as an activist and also a citizen of your community?
My role, I believe, is just to be there for the people in my community, because I'm blessed to be from a place where I grew up here and played basketball here, and the support I got was unreal, and it's about time that I gave it back. And Austining can set the tone, and that's why I love being a part of this community, because we can set an example for what other communities should do.
Jalay is using her position in her community to promote equity, and she hopes that her efforts will inspire activism in other communities. I used my poem to try and express what happens to people in my community on a daily basis. We have spoken up. Now it's the responsibility of others to listen. You're listening to Sprouts from Pacifica, radio from the grassroots. Sprouts is a weekly program bringing you local radio productions of national interest. Today, we're talking about youth resisting racism. I'm Justin from Outcasting. You just heard my poem, Thoughts, and an interview with Jalay Knowles, founder of What About Us, a local activist organization in New York. This piece originally aired on Outcasting Overtime, produced by Mark Sofis. Next, we'll hear from Katie Stone and the crew of the Children's Hour. Joining them are behavioral psychologist Dr. Rebecca Ezechukwu and Dr. Danielle Riddle.
I'm delighted to be here with a lot of great people. Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Well, let's see who's here.
Hi, it's Maya.
Hello, it's Zen.
Hello, it's Amadeus.
Hi, it's Isaac.
Hello, it's Octavia.
Hi, it's Lucas.
Hi, it's Evan.
Happy day, it's Maya.
Hi, it's Daniel.
Well, today on the show, we are going to be talking about a topic that can make people very uncomfortable to discuss: racism. But I'll tell you something, racism actually can make other people who are the victims of it more than just uncomfortable. In fact, racism is deadly and it's toxic for our culture. But I'm curious, how would you guys define racism?
It's where somebody is judging you by the color of your skin, and it's a lie. They're lying to you, and people just believe that lie.
I think that racism is kind of a bias to a certain race or a certain type of people, which is not very good. You know, we all need to be working together and, you know, accept each other as we are, you know, and not necessarily be biased to one person, race, or something along those lines. But, you know, yeah, I guess that's kind of what it is, in a sense.
All of those seem really plausible. And we're going to talk more about racism and being anti-racist. With us today is Dr. Rebecca Ezechukwu. She is a clinical psychologist in the Division of Community Behavioral Health and an assistant professor in the Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences at the University of New Mexico Health Sciences Center. Also with us is Dr. Danielle Riddle Price. She is a clinical psychologist working in private practice with Riddle Price Associates. They provide mental health services to youth and their families. Welcome to the Children's Hour.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us. We're glad to be here.
You heard the kids try to define what racism is. Can you tell us what do you think of their definitions? How did they do? And how would you define racism?
Well, I think the kids have a great start, and I heard some good comments about, you know, biases towards certain races, treating people differently because of the color of their skin. And I really think that we're getting close to what racism is, because I think it is one of those topics that sometimes can be really confusing and hard to understand. And Dr. Danielle and I were talking before this, and I thought that she had a really great way of simplifying this for kids maybe who are just now learning about what racism is or trying to understand it a little bit better. So Danielle, let me kick it to you.
Great definitions, very good definitions. And it's when I'm working with clients who are some of your ages, actually, and I work with them and I teach them about unfair. Who in the room has something that happened to them that was unfair? Can everyone say they've had something happen that they thought was unfair?
Yeah, for sure.
Yes. So I see somebody has a brother and sister. So is there ever some unfairness that you see between brothers and sisters?
Yeah.
And sometimes we feel like they get treated unfairly, like they get two scoops of ice cream instead of one, or they get to get a new bike, or they get new tennis shoes and you don't. So if you think about it in terms of what's fair and unfair, we understand that. We understand that it's not fair for you to get to go outside and play for an hour and I can't go outside at all. So if you look at it in the terms of, if it's unfair to treat someone a certain way because of the color of their skin, it's unfair for them to be hurt or to be scared or to be fearful or to not have the same breaks in life just because they happen to be a different shade, right? So that's how you look at it when you look at being fair and unfair. And that just makes it really simple. If you can be kind to everyone, no matter what they look like, that's a huge step, right? In getting rid of that bias. I think I love what Maya said. It's like they're lying to you about what they see when they see that person. And I think it's very helpful for us to keep in mind that we just want to be fair. We want to be treated fair. How would you want to be treated?
Kids don't start off being racist, do they?
No. If you think about it, the simplest way is preschool, you know, or little kids playing at the park when they're toddlers. They don't care what color the other kid they're playing with is. They just want to play because that's their friend, right? It's more of a small cues that are provided from their parents or people around them, because we are their filters. Parents are your filters to the world. So how they react to people around you is how you learn to react and how you view things and things that we say without even realizing it. There are some things that we say and don't do. And sometimes it's not, you're teaching your kid to be racist, but you're not teaching them to not be racist. If that makes sense.
Well, we definitely want to cover that on the Children's Hour. Not only how to understand what racism is, but also how to be anti-racist. Have any of you learned about racism in school?
Partly.
Yeah.
Not really.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
Really, like history, like history, yeah. Like taking like the people of different color as slaves and. So, yeah, we've learned about it in history, but not, like, modern racism.
Once I became homeschooled, then I started to learn about it a little bit more. But apart from that, no.
In school, no. But homeschooled, yes.
Why aren't we learning about racism in school? And what could schools be doing?
Well, I think that's a great question. And I'm amazed, but also not completely surprised to see all of the kids kind of shaking their heads about not learning so much about racism. You know, I will say at this point, I think children are never too young to talk about race, and it's never too late to start. And so for the parents who are listening, I would encourage you to, you know, for young kids, you know, preschool and younger, some of what you're doing to start to help kids develop their anti-racist qualities and just being anti-racist. And so, you know, helping kids to just notice what they're seeing in the world, describing physical differences associated with race, you know, like skin tone, voices. I think, you know, as far as how we teach kids and how we learn, it's not just learning about racism, it's learning how to recognize and understand the privilege that being white, you know, being a white person has had a lot of privilege over history. And sometimes the ways that we see that privilege, we may not even realize. So if you think about it, the books that you read may have characters that are all white in skin tone. And so one way that we can start to even just introduce this understanding that there are multiple and varied individuals and races is just introducing folks to those materials at a very early age. So when you're in your classroom, even looking through your history books, what are the images that you're seeing? You know, that can tell you a lot about what has already existed before you.
I am watching Little House on the Prairie. It has racism in it. Because the mom, she never wants to see a black person, a Native American.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And do you know, how does she, can you tell how she's feeling when she says that she never wants to see a Native American?
She's feeling upset.
She's feeling upset. And I would bet she's probably also feeling scared. So one of the things that we know contributes to racism is when we feel scared, scared of people because of their race. And for many of us, we may not realize that we're feeling scared. But oftentimes, if we pay attention to the way that our bodies feel, you know, when we're witnessing racism or we're witnessing really stressful experiences like protests, our bodies can tell us a lot about what we might be feeling. And so noticing, you know, is our heart beating fast when we're trying to have these conversations? Or are we feeling like it's very hard to talk when we notice somebody else experiencing racism? Or are we having trouble asking our parents questions? Sometimes that's a way that might contribute to not talking about these very important topics. It's really interesting. I think a lot of kids actually have a lot of questions about race that they don't feel comfortable asking their parents. And so, again, if I were to give advice to the parents out there, it would be to, you know, ask your kids what they're seeing, you know, and sometimes just leading with open-ended questions. So what did you see today on the news? Or what did you see outside? And how are you feeling? What questions might you have? And I think parents sometimes get really worried about having all the right answers for these conversations. And sometimes if you're just creating a space for kids to express what they're seeing, that can actually open the conversation up quite a bit. And you may find as a parent, you actually do have the ability to navigate these conversations.
We have to talk about what's happening now on the ground in our country. And I want to ask the kids crew, have you been following the news? Does anyone want to sort of take a stab at what are you seeing in the news?
Okay, so I believe that after the murder of a black man, George Floyd, when a police officer knelt on his neck for about 8 minutes, suffocating him, there were many protests of police brutality and racism that police are going into using tear gas, rubber bullets, all these horrible things. And these are peaceful protesters, yet the police are still using mace and all this horrible stuff. And I believe the protest is in 400, 500 major cities now.
I heard this a while ago, but Donald Trump, he's going to be removing all black people and putting them in jail.
Oh, Maya, there is a lot of misinformation going around, and that one is definitely not true. I want to ask our doctors who are with us, our psychologists, Dr. Ezechukwu and Dr. Danielle, can we talk a little bit about what's happening right now? And, you know, clearly kids see it from all different kinds of ways.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Dr. Danielle and I have clinical practice. And so we have been having these conversations with the kids in our clinical practice. And depending on how old kids are, their ways of making sense of this information is going to be very different. Even, you know, the difference between what you're seeing and what you're hearing and, you know, equating that with truth. And so Lucas was the person who mentioned that most of these protests are peaceful. And that's right. And I think that's one thing to keep in mind is that, you know, the ability to protest is a constitutional liberty. It's a right. And the fact that people are out there using their voices to protest racism and police brutality and injustice is a right that they have. And so I think recognizing that the majority of people who are out there are doing this for purposes of making this country better, for using their voices, for demonstrating that what we've been experiencing as a country is not okay. And we don't want to continue to say that it's okay. Because there is violence also happening within these peaceful protests, that makes everything much more confusing and I think a lot scarier when you're a kid. And so what I would encourage, you know, the kids that are seeing some of what's happening in our community or watching it on the news is asking your parents questions about what you're seeing. And I think this is also where a conversation about healthy media intake comes into play and ensuring that parents are watching media with their kids. So if there are things that you are both watching together, at least parents can help correct any misconceptions or at the very least be a supportive presence for a child to just express what they're seeing. It's really important for us to to ask kids what they're seeing and what questions they have, rather than assuming that we know how they're making sense of all this information. Because, you know, as Maya indicated, there's a lot of content too that they may just hear passing through a room.
A big question that's come up is a lot of my clients have asked me, what can they do to help their Black friends? And some of the Black kids have asked as well, all my friends are white, what do I do? You know, I don't want to feel bad against them, they're still my friends. So helping them understand, just to have the conversation, just saying I support you as my friend is all you have to do. You know, for the kids who have friends who are African American, being there, not shunning the conversation away if it comes up, and just saying I support you. They've gotten a lot of phone calls from friends, or they've called their friends saying I support you and I'm sorry this is happening to people that you may know or people that look like you. So for all the parents, limit the amount of exposure that you're giving from COVID-19 to the racism acts that are happening, making sure that you're running that boat with your kids, and that you're that voice that tells them how to handle their anger and what to do.
So what can we do to be anti-racist?
I think first, being aware that people are different than you, being aware that just because you're not afraid to be on your bike driving down the street, or if you get pulled over, you're not afraid that the police are going to harm you, or that someone's going to do something to you. Being aware that if you have a Black friend, that they do have that fear, that they may have that fear. So just being understanding of that. I think learning to understand other races, so doing some reading on your own. You have your phones and your computers and your tablets, so you can research a lot of things that are age appropriate for you. And if you need help, you can always go to your parents, go to a teacher. One of the kids decided to do a book report, one of my clients, on an African American from back in the Civil War times, just because he wanted to learn. So he had to do his own research. So when you have a choice at school to pick someone, when they give you assignments for history, you can pick someone who's African American, or just listening to what you're thinking when you see someone of a different color or race. You know, how are you feeling when you see them? Are you afraid? Are you nervous? Are you anxious? Are you happy? Do you see them as different? And then asking a parent or someone, say, why do I feel that way about them? What is it about them that's making me feel differently than I would if they were white?
Yeah, I think those were great, Dr. Danielle. I would just add that I think for the kids that identify as white on the crew, and just who, you know, those that are listening, I think it's really important to ask your parents and learn about your own racial and cultural identity. And I think that, you know, oftentimes when we're talking about race, we sort of just assume that race is only impacting people of color. But white is a race as well. And sometimes when we're able to learn more about our own backgrounds, it actually makes it easier to learn about other people and understand and accept the differences that other people have that make them unique. I think also, you know, as a kid, ways to be anti-racist, to be, you know, white allies or accomplice is another term that I've heard lately as well. But it's understanding that people get bullied for lots of different reasons, including their skin color. And so if you see something like that happening, letting people know you're bullying, that's racist, I don't accept that. And just being able to stand up to that as you can. So think about how you might feel when you see something like that happen. Angry, confused, shocked, sad. The ability to be able to name what you're feeling is going to help you. And I think asking a teacher, a parent, a coach, anybody that you trust, and just letting them know that you saw that, and know that it takes a lot of courage to tell someone when you see something like that happening, and just to recognize, like, it takes bravery, and we can do it. It's one way to support others.
Dr. Rebecca Esichukwu, clinical psychologist in the Division of Community and Behavioral Health and an assistant professor in the Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences at the University of New Mexico Health Sciences Center. And Dr. Danielle Riddle Price is a clinical psychologist working in private practice. Her practice is named Riddle Price Associates, and they provide mental health services to youth and their families. She's also a member of the Black Mental Health Coalition. It's just been such a pleasure to have you on the Children's Hour. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us about this today.
I was so excited to meet all of you, and thank you for all of your questions and for the work that you're doing. Remember that you are the role models for your peers and your friends. And so I ask that you continue to probe and ask those questions, like Dr. Rebecca said, and to notice when there's inequality, notice when things are unfair and how you feel about it and what you can do.
You know, I have just loved being a part of this conversation and hearing these real kid questions, because I think many kids may be more equipped to start these conversations than parents. And parents, be brave. So thank you for having me today.
That does it for this week's edition of Sprouts, featuring content from Outcasting Media, creator of Public Radio's LGBTQ youth programs, online at outcastingmedia.org, and the Children's Hour, making radio for kids with kids, online at childrenshour.org. The Sprouts theme music is Torpedoes on Tuesday by Poison Control Center. Sprouts is a weekly program produced in collaboration with community radio stations and independent producers across the country. This edition was co-produced by Stephanie Schubert of Pacifica, Mark Sofis of Outcasting Media, and Katie Stone of The Children's Hour. Sprouts is coordinated and distributed by Pacifica Radio, thanks to Brian David at Satellite Operations. If you or someone at your radio station has a production that you wish to showcase nationally on Sprouts, contact our air traffic controller, Ursula Rudenberg, at ursula@pacifica.org. That's URSULA@pacifica.org. I'm Dustin in New York. Thank you for listening. See you next time on Sprouts.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next is Jazz Lives, right after these news headlines.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM.